This is Cut to It with Steve Smith Sr., a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
And I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut to It.
Cut to it. Cut to it. Let's get down to it. Cut to it.
We ask the questions you always want to know, but no one ever asks.
Let's cut to it.
I should know it's on. You ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know. I should know it's on. It's on.
Coming up on the Cut to It podcast, we've got professional soccer player CJ Sapong, the MLS Rookie of the Year in 2011. He won an MLS Cup in 2013, and he's the co-founder of the Black Players Coalition for MLS. CJ Sapong on the Cut to It podcast.
This is part two with CJ Sapong on why, the how, soccer, just about him and what he believes in and what he's experiencing in soccer. Part one was a lot about his past and what he experienced and what he learned about his family, his community in Ghana. But then also now we're talking about his soccer career, MLS. And also, too, you'll hear what he desires and what he likes about soccer and how he wants to impact the soccer world. With everything you're going back and forth, you have so much heritage oozing out of your family. How does that impact you, like as a high schooler, going to college, just really starting to form? You're in Virginia. You're kind of dealing with that. You're going back and forth every couple of summers, going to Ghana, dealing with that, you know, getting embraced in your family tribe. And then you go to Virginia and you're playing soccer and all that stuff. It had to be, you know, very confusing to switch like that so much and experience is literally like heads and tails of life for a young man.
Yep. Yep. You're wearing different masks. You know, you're turning up the black in some situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're turning down the black here. You're turning it up there. You're wondering who you are. Bro, I didn't really find my true nature until probably my third year as a professional soccer player.
Mm. What was that? When you say true nature, what are you pertaining to true nature?
True nature is my own understanding and awareness of my frequency, right? Like who I am. And again, not consistently robbing myself of who I am to make this person comfortable or to sound cool on this interview, or, you know, like just I found myself from an early age, you know, from the first time I went to school and somebody made a comment about how dark I am compared to everybody else, you know, and I remember my parents telling me I would always have to work twice as hard simply because of that, you know, and that led to, I think I was fortunate that I didn't, I didn't want for nothing. Like most of the things that I asked for, I did get, but it was tough having that childhood mental construct just follow me up until, you know, 3 years into the league where, again, I had to go to a dark place where, you know, we won a championship in my third year in the league, and that was like my dream. That was my goal, was to win a championship at the professional level. And I did it, and then the next month, you're right back at work, and it's like, oh, we're going to do it again. And I'm like, damn, I didn't even really get to, like, let that shit marinate. Like, we got to do it again? All right, cool, let's do it. But then that season didn't go like everybody wanted. You know, I wasn't playing as much anymore. I got sent to our like minor league team, and again, it had me questioning. A question that popped up at many moments in my life, but I always found something to hide it, found something to stifle it. It's like, who are you? What are you doing? You know, and this is still after being able to go to Africa. You know, I had that moment. It was true and ripe for a good, you know, 6 months to a year, but then shoot, you in America, American life just takes over. And it's keeping up with the Joneses. It's looking cool. It's staying fresh, having new kicks. You know, it's like chasing, continuously chasing without, like you said, hope. You don't even know what we're chasing for sometimes, you know? Whereas now, when I say true nature, it's a complete understanding, not even just image-wise of what I'm trying to create for myself, my family, and this world, but a innate feeling of what it's going to bring me. You know, that's what takes that to the next level, is knowing that, I, you know, right now, the feeling at whether 50, 60 on a rocking chair, not because I ain't doing shit, but just because I'm taking a moment and understanding that in that moment, I have so much to still live for, you know, and that's a very empowering feeling, and it empowers me every day. And I literally, I got lots of hope, you know, I got the budget, the plans, the financial goals, all that shit's, you know, written up in documents. So that's helped me, you know, more centralize the focus more. And now when I leave wherever my place of dwelling is at that moment, I walk into the day and I walk into the world with my chest high and an excitement, honestly.
You go to James Madison University, and I read some stuff that said that your decision to go to college was based on education. And I kind of chuckled at that, because then I look at some of the offers that you had. University of Virginia, that ain't a school for dummies. You know, so take us through that recruiting process of how you came to that decision just to choose college, especially after, you know, what all this stuff that you've experienced so far as a, I don't even want to say an African-American. You straight cultured, up African.
Cultured young man. Mm-hmm.
You straight up African and happen to live in America.
Yep. The education was a plus, but mostly, well, one, my college soccer coach, may he rest in peace, Tom Martin, just passed, but I owe a lot to this man, because he told me from the jump, look, I'm not going to tell you you're going to start. I'm not going to tell you you sit on the bench. What I will tell you is you have an opportunity to compete. That's all I wanted to hear. Virginia, they said, yeah. Virginia, they said, oh, we're thinking by your junior year, you'll start. Other schools were telling me, yeah, I was a forward. I want to score goals. Other schools is telling me, nah, you're going to be a defender here. I'm like, nah, don't tell me what, don't place parameters on me. Allow me to, again, find myself. And James Madison University, at the time, was known for,
they're right. Still known for parties. So I don't know what you're talking about. Time, I'm like, they still known for parties. Yeah. I went to community college, and I had a partner go to James Madison, old lineman.
Okay,
there, and he talked about it so much, like, bro, like, because he's from Cali. So it was a big step, and he went out there. He said, "Oh,
I didn't know it went down like that.
It goes down, because here's why: you got the rejects that can't go to Virginia, and then you have Blacksburg. You got Virginia Tech, and then James Madison is like UVA, right, it's right in the middle.
Yeah.
It's
right in the middle.
It's like second base. You got first base, third base, and then second base is James Madison.
You know,
they ain't gonna appreciate you calling them rejects, though,
bro. I'm just calling it." Bro, you notice another reject school, South Carolina, because they say the USC. You ain't USC. You the University of South Carolina.
Now you're really about to ask people.
It's true, though. I didn't go to either one, but I'm just telling you. So
yeah, no, that was a big thing for me. Is the I knew I was going to, again, the other schools was like, yeah, here we do a dry season, no alcohol during the season, you know, different guys like,
That's a hint.
Yeah, you gotta do a dry season. It's gonna be interesting.
You gotta be wet to dry out. 2011, you were drafted 10th overall. So you're in the top 10 pick. Take us through, because football, being a top 10 pick, man, it is a circus. It is a circus. So, you know, obviously MLS does not have that much eyes as the NFL, but y'all, but you got a little bit. Take us through that, what the soccer circus was for you being a top 10 pick.
You know, it's interesting. I had a very different experience than most guys that go top 10. I went to a team, the coach, he didn't care what number you went. I still had to try out, you know. Every other player in the top 10 had a contract before they even stepped on the field. I had to go through a month and a half of preseason before I even signed.
Why do you not get a guarantee being number 10?
Well, one, I didn't have a good agent. That was
agent.
Because I was a, what you call, I guess, somewhat of a sleeper coming up. So it wasn't until I was at the combine that I realized I had a strong opportunity of getting picked, and a whole bunch of agents were like in my face, and I ended up going with a guy that was like from where I lived, and he made it seem like he really knew what he was doing, but he really didn't. And so they actually tried to get me on like a reserve contract, which basically means it's like a practice squad contract. They try to finesse me hard, but you know, I actually have always excelled in those positions, whether it's being the underdog or continuously having to grind and work towards something. Because I can safely say I earned my contract, my first contract in this league. There's guys that have gone number one, number two, never even played a professional game, you know, out of the league in 2 to 3 years.
You said the combine. So they have a combine for these players? What does that entail?
Yeah, man. I think it's different structure now. But for me, if you call it a combine, I mean, bro, we played 3 scrimmages, right? We did a 40-yard dash. We did a vertical test. And I think like a shuttle run. And that was a combine, you know? So
the teams, did they interview you?
The teams interview you. You know, you're at the little resort, and every day you got a list of appointments, if you will. And that was a wild, wild, wild experience for me. But I do think I definitely gained points with how I spoke. You know, I had the feeling that I wasn't that typical black man that a lot of these guys were expecting. I don't want to say it's sad to say, but you guys know how it is. You can feel.
I wanted you to play stupid.
Yeah. Uh-uh, I don't know what you mean.
But
talk about it. Talk about it, dog.
Yeah, so it's like you know you're sitting down, and once you start having the conversation and you, I guess, articulate what's on your mind, or you use a quote unquote big word or fancy word here and there, and then you get the little raised eyebrow, or the wow,
you speak so well.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's how they do. And then it's interesting for me, because I think my first year, that's what made me very marketable as well, because oh snap, number 10 pick, right? I wasn't getting the hype, as you know, right off the bat, but my first game, I scored 2 minutes into the game. Ooh. So then like, yeah, hell yeah. So they're like, okay, you can ball a little bit. Oh, and in the interview, the interview, I not only showed personality, but I was able to articulate, you know, how I was feeling, how the plays that led up to me scoring, you know, stuff like that. And that's when they're like, okay. And then they asked me to do the interviews here, there, everywhere, you know. And like, again, I've heard he speaks so well. Well, so such a well-spoken kid, you know.
As if you
like,
were not
such an athlete. Exactly. And like, that's the little aspects where people don't realize. Like, damn, like, well.
So you in that result of being a well-spoken, having that charisma, being able to have the game to back it up, you became Rookie of the Year.
Right.
Yes, sir.
You become Rookie of the Year. let me pause for a little bit though, because I've had this I had this enlightenment when you really think about it, of sometimes sports really mimics. Because right next to my question, I have Kate Coase. And it enlightens me to understanding, like, sports, a lot of the sports, a lot of the athletes are people of color. And the combine is almost like the slave trade. And let's go down memory lane, because you bring all of these individuals, you put them on an airplane, and you herd them into a, one centralized location. And then you have all the other people that are coming in, and they examine you. They poke you. They prod you. They see, let me see how strong this boy is. And they want to see how strong you are. Can you carry the workload? Do you have the mental capacity? What is his deficiencies, and what is his attributes? And then they all, they have a draft. And what is the draft?
Your work.
If someone likes you, what do? They barter with someone else to move up to get their special workload. And they examine you, and they look at you, and then they decide what's your value, and then they get you and they take you off. And I had that. I was kind of near my end of my career, and I was at the combine, and I bumped into a kid, and he was hurt. He was being herded in at the combine. I'm like, bro, this is modern day slavery. And I didn't really see it that way. Now, somebody listening and say, really, Steve, modern day slavery.
Take that and run with it.
Right. You really saying, all I'm saying is it just really has something very familiar with people coming into a place and bidding on guys. And the difference is that we are free and we have the opportunity to choose to participate in that. But one of the unique things, not everybody does. Right. So as I sidetracked on that, I go back to rookie of the year. What did that success do to your mind so early on, 6-7 months after getting drafted?
Honestly, it was very humbling, because it wasn't easy for me. It didn't necessarily come naturally. It came from a lot of sacrifice, a lot of effort. So I couldn't help but just really feel grounded in knowing that all the work that I had put into the game, all the, you know, night outs with the homies that I missed to go, because I knew I had a soccer game the next day. It made me really feel.
But was that a sacrifice, or was that you changing and becoming a professional?
Yeah, your own dedication.
Because some people say sacrifice, and you're like, well, how can you sacrifice just your job? So was it really the sacrifice, or was it just you locking in saying, if I really, because you weren't given success, you weren't given that big contract, you had to earn your contract. Yeah. Like you said, they made you try out as the 10th overall pick.
Oh, hey, bro, I was saying it was sacrifice when I was younger. When I was a pro, like my first year, I was learning to be a good pro, but I also had me a good time. I actually think that had a strong bearing on my success too, because while I wanted to, you know, perform for my team, I also subconsciously understood the importance of being loose and being happy, and, you know, not confining myself or boxing myself into, again, a mental construct of what I have to do to be good, right? You see players, they're real strict with the diet, you know, they don't leave the house, they play in the Xbox and whatnot, just to stay in the crib. Whereas me, like, I was stepping out. I was, you know, seeing stuff in the city. This was Kansas City. And that is, I believe.
That was a quick step.
That was a quick out. that's dope though, because you don't hear a lot of athletes saying, "I enjoyed myself. I had fun." That
I had fun.
Never really heard that before.
They try, "Oh man, I'm eating, I'm breathing soccer."
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep. And I mean, I had good guys around me too. I had a lot of brothers. I had a lot of. I had one of my best friends still to this day, Kai Kumara. He's from Sierra Leone. So he understood, you know, that culture aspect that I've been talking with you guys about, you know, was able to kind of keep me honed in on one. Yes. Like, we are professionals and we got to perform, but at the same time, our families and what we've come from and the things that we've gone through to be here right now in America, we came here to enjoy too. You know, it's not so, well, it shouldn't solely just be a job, right? You do hear of countries where families and members have to come to America to find a better life and they slave away at the end of it, but they need to be able to find a time to enjoy, you know, what they're living in and what they're doing. Otherwise, what is the point of this all?
We have to take a break, and more than anything, we got to pay some bills.
Mm-hmm. Need that check.
I love Cut To It, and I love it even more when you download us and subscribe.
And you can follow us on social media too, Smitty.
Where at?
That's at Cut To It on Instagram.
What about Twitter?
At Cut To It.
Facebook?
Cut To It featuring Steve Smith Sr.
What about online?
And you can follow us at cuttoitpodcast.com, where you can buy merch and you can subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
I got all my answers I got all my questions answered.
That's what I'm here for, brother. cuttoitpodcast.com.
Let's talk ball. And for you, ball is soccer. And some kids out there listening, how do they become a professional soccer player?
Woo! How to become a professional soccer player? Well, I think it starts with, you know, how bad you want it, man. And I think you hear that a lot, but the next step is, what is a kid willing to do to become a professional soccer player? Are they training an extra 30 minutes after practice? Are they, you know, ensuring that the food that they're putting in their body is going to maximize their performance the next day? Are they visualizing and envisioning, you know, those moments? It's not a cookie. There's no cookie cutter way to it. You know, I think it's all within your heart and your passion and believing that you are not necessarily, it's not like, oh, believe it and you will achieve. You need a form of belief, but you need a form of action as well. Because that cliche, you know, it sounds good, right? Like, guys, believe and you will achieve. It's like, okay, that's one part of it.
You can believe it, but you got to put some work in.
Exactly. And that's where I think if we as, you know, us as adults can kind of instill that into kids, we'll start to see, you know, especially within our community, you'll start to see a lot more athletes, not just in basketball or football, but like soccer, lacrosse, baseball, you know, understanding that there are other sports and other avenues in which we as people can utilize our strengths.
So my son gave me this. My son used to play soccer, blew out his knee. And I asked him, give me something I can ask CJ. He said, you know, Dad, because he was a forward, but because he played on a soccer team that they couldn't really feed him the way he needed to be fed, but he was a great distributor. But then when he got to college, he struggled because he played so much as a center mid. He struggled to play the right back or the forward. Because he mentally and physically, his muscle memory was giving other people opportunities to create patterns for them that he could not have the ability. He didn't know how to switch it over to
soccer version of a point guard.
Yeah, he couldn't create his own shot. Gotcha. So he asked me to ask you, which was really cool, especially for him, because he doesn't he's still in that stage where he's being vulnerable with his dad, but he doesn't want the "I told you so" to come out of my mouth. Mm. And I tried very hard not to give him that, but it was really transparent on his. He says, "What do you do when teammates or coaches seem to lose confidence in you? How do you stay self-confident?"
I think for that one, that's where as an individual, you got to get really creative, man. Because look, the tricky part of that is if you're looking for that confidence from that confidence you get from your teammates and your coach should just be the sprinkles. You need to have it within your own self. And I personally know because of a lot of times in my career, I was looking for that. And when I didn't get it, it affected my performance. That's when I went back to the lab and it's repetition. We as athletes, if he was playing college soccer, he's smart enough in the game to know what his strengths and what his weaknesses are. That's where you have to say, you know what? All right, bet. I'm going to go back to my personal lab and I'm going to find all the things that I don't do right. And I'm going to do each 50 times. I'm going to do each 100 times. You know, that's, like you said, muscle memory. The thing is, when you get to college and professional, you are now the block that they trying to fit into the hole. You could be a square block. They try to put you in a circle. Like, they are doing what they are doing to ensure that the team wins and that they win. Yeah, they're not about
and still pay that mortgage and have that private.
Exactly. They ain't out there coaching individuals to make them better, you know? So at the end of the day, if we are looking to them for validation, we're ultimately going to be in a, yes, it might work out for a little bit, but I've seen with guys that are not playing now are even looking for that in their workspaces, you know? And it's just a dangerous circle or cycle to get lost in. When you're continuously looking for confidence from other people. So that's the best I can give, because I also know in doing that, in relying on yourself,
yeah,
you will be able to take that into other things in your life and be successful.
I guess when I say teammates, because I have seen it, right? You could be on the pitch and, you know, in basketball, shoot or shoot. Whether you hot or cold,
that's the only way to come out of it.
Whether you hot or cold, if you're a shooter, the center is not going to take that three if the shooter is at the 3-point in a baseline wide open. He's not. He's not even going to dunk it, because that's three. Two and three don't add up. We're going to get that 3-pointer.
Yeah.
But when you're a forward, you know, you're judged on shots. Right. It's always funny, as you know, I know, learn this soccer lingo. Oh, that's unlucky, bro.
Unlucky. Let me tell you. Unlucky.
Yeah. I'm the one who doesn't know the ins and outs of soccer.
I've been sitting at damn soccer games for so long. They'd be like, that's unlucky. And I'm a football guy. Right. I'm a realist, too. I'm like, nah, that ain't lucky. That boy just got that boy got bullied off the ball. That ain't
he got what was coming to him.
Yeah. Or then the ball, he missed it. I'm like, the goal has been in the same spot all day.
Yeah, that's the first. That's unlucky.
CJ, am I lying with that unlucky?
No, you're right. You're right, bro.
Like, oh, that's unlucky. I'm like, he missed that damn goal by a mile. What are you talking about?
The hell did luck have to do with it?
Yeah. Unlucky. No, it's not. Little Johnny's awful.
That's the thing with soccer in this country, because, you know, it's such a – and I'm not arguing either way here, but that's where it is different than, like, a football or basketball, because soccer is more that, you know, participatory sport, and it's about working in a group and everybody gets to play, you know. So because that's the foundation, you see it – In later stages too of the game. Yeah.
How do you handle, because you're saying get back to the lab, you know, maintain your own self-confidence, you know, working out, get, you know, you got to get tricky, you know, with your own self. You got to do that drill 50 to 100 times a day. But what happens when your actual teammates start to see that brother ain't unlucky today? That brother just off.
Yeah.
Right? And then they start to pass around you. You're a forward. The ball must go to you, and now it's not going to you. How do you handle when your teammates have lost confidence in you? They're passing around you. They're the coaches. You know, ball still in play. You can see your backup is starting to warm up, right? You know, y'all doing that little patented kick, butt kickers on the side. Hey, you know, how do you not peek over, you know, in the corner of your eye and you see that you're about to be replaced?
Yep, you can't. You don't. Bro, I've even gone through that as a pro. My last year in Chicago, I ended up coming out that this guy and his wife were racist. So I got some closure in understanding why. But there's this guy on the field, man. I'm making the best possible runs I can make. I'm sitting in positions to score open goals. And this dude just wouldn't pass me. Wouldn't pass. And, like, I'm in my head, like, damn, like, what am I doing wrong, right? And I'm pulling up clips and showing it to the coaches, asking them, hey, what can I do better here? And, you know, they were giving me fluff answers because they knew what the deal was. At the end of the day,
I missed something, and I've been pretty alert. what did I miss? What did they know?
They knew Mans was racist, but this that's a whole nother story.
Well, we hey, brother, this is my podcast. We got all that. I mean, you dropped that. Listen, Hansel, and I'm Gretel. We in the woods. I ain't picking up them breadcrumbs. We follow our way back to Oscar's wilderness. What you talking about? You said,
yeah, yeah,
you
know, bro.
Skip over, we can skip over. But I'm interested here.
No, because it all does circle back to essentially what can be done in those moments, right? So I got traded to Chicago Fire the beginning of 2019. I came to a team that had a striker who scored, I want to say, like 18 goals the season before. They had another guy.
Happy you came.
Yeah, so I came.
That happens. That's called competition.
Yeah, exactly. It's healthy.
In most people's eyes.
Yeah. So I was fortunate because the first game of the season, that striker, congrats to him, had a child. And so he missed the first game. And so I step in. I end up scoring in my first game with the team. So I just went off of that momentum. And, you know, I scored within, I think, the next, like, 8 or 9 games. I probably had, like, 4 or 5 goals. And so, like, it's weird because I want to say I felt it. And when I say I felt it, it was the discomfort with me. Just me as a person in this locker room. My team in Philadelphia, which was my previous team, had brothers galore. We had Islanders. We had some dudes from the Caribbean. We had some Africans. Lots of brothers. It was vibes. We dancing in the locker room. And then in Chicago, I was one of two in the locker room.
How many on the squad? Like reserve? You?
Oh, yeah, like 25, 26.
25. Let's say 26. And so there's 24 people that are not of different descent. Historically, they all look the same.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's some Hispanics in there, you know, but there's mostly like white boys. Eastern, on this particular team, it was Eastern European, like Poland, Serbia,
German,
you know. German, yeah, exactly.
CJ, did that experience help shape and lead you to form the Black Players Coalition for the MLS?
Oh yeah. That was one of the stories. Because I'm on the board, right? So we had a call with our commissioner and all the coaches in the league. And, you know, to be fair, like, they don't know what they don't know. They've just been, a lot of people have just been blind to it, you know? They made the mistake of asking us, like, where we actually experience racism or systemic injustice. And, I mean, we all went down the line and we gave them, you know, the experiences and the examples. And for me, that was a big one because I'm on a team. I'm trying to win. And my mans was literally refusing to pass me the ball when it put us in positions to win. And regardless of color, if you're a coach or a fan or whatnot, when you if you see that, I believe it should be called out. Not if not for the racism, for the sheer fact that we have all put on this jersey with this crest to win. And because of you and your bullshit or whatever is in your head, you are now restricting the team or being a hindrance upon our success. Yeah. And it was just outrageous to me that it went on for as long as it did.
How was that meeting with all the other players, with the coaches? Yeah,
to bring them together.
To bring y'all together. Did you feel like the coaches were listening, or did you feel like y'all were just like, it was a bitch session?
Out here on an island.
Yeah.
Man, it felt real in the moment, but then as things, you know, had transpired, I feel like it was just, yeah, it was just a little session and, you know, people, you know, get on. Yeah, they said, oh, well, we listened to you guys. We hear you, okay? And we're going to do better. But then, you know, everything is old status quo, you know? Like, we shoot, for instance, us, we made a whole Black Lives Matter shirt for our little bubble tournament. And now, you know, already people are, you know, within the league, they're, oh, we don't need those shirts anymore. We got to let our sponsors have to be seen, guys. Come on. Like, you know, we've got to keep on. We got to go with regularly scheduled program. I'm like, damn. Like, y'all gave us 2-3 weeks and thought that was it, huh?
You got your Black History in June and July.
Yeah.
You know, February come around the corner now.
Run along.
Oh, man. Oh, man. It's sad. And it shows how deep the injustice is. It's really, really deep, man. And, you know, whether it's that situation or a situation where a player is literally willing to put his team in a position to lose, it's something that I think is going to take a long time. But, you know, us having these conversations, is the way to start it. It's going to take a minute, but if we can't have these conversations and, like you said, invoke some cringe and some visceral reactions, then it definitely is not going to change.
But what has happened to the individual that you're speaking about? You know, I cut you off, but I wanted to stay. I didn't want to shortchange.
Oh, okay, yeah.
For the story. Now, moving forward, you know, you saw you just weren't the person complaining. He moved on to another team. And then what happened?
Yeah, so he went on to another team. When the situation with George Floyd happened and, you know, there were protests all around the country, his wife actually posted something on Instagram, was a picture, because, you know, there's a lot of looting. She found a picture of some Black people in front of a store. Some had some shoes in their hands running, and she posted in Serbian, oh, Black lives or Black Nikes matter, guys. And followed that post up with another picture of some looting and some Black folks in Serbian again, said, kill them all.
Wow.
Yes.
Kill them all.
Kill them all.
I don't know if she thought that, you know, technology can translate.
Yeah, like,
like she, was high, right? She was doing it on the low.
Right.
She was.
I just, you know,
let me hit them in
casually.
Let me hit them in Serbian. Right. So they, all them other ones, ain't gonna know what this means.
Right. Oh my gosh, bro! And your husband plays for a professional soccer team in L.A. though. Yeah. Like, so she knew. She didn't care.
And
so, deep.
So he got. So what happened?
So he from that, fired. Well, so this is what happened. So
I'm the only.
Yeah, right. So that happened, and obviously there was just uproar from a lot of people, fans of the team, like, yo, this is unacceptable, this, that, and the other. And the Galaxy, LA team, they actually, you know, they invited him in, the player. They invited him to have a meeting to, I guess, discuss the situation.
That's mighty nice of them.
Right? Must be, huh? That we can, let's talk about this, okay? Imagine. But I don't know what was said in that in that meeting, I heard that essentially they asked him to basically put out a statement apologizing, and he refused. And so they're like, all right, bet, you gone.
Wow.
So do you think that that's this individual that we're not naming, you can always look it up. Mm-hmm. Do you believe this individual will get picked back up?
He already did. He went back to his home country, and he's on. I think one of the best teams out there in Serbia. So, yep, just like that.
Well, moving along.
I just kind of killed that vibe. Dang, Kendrick.
But it just shows you, man. Like, that's how deep.
I think it's about that time. Just take a little breather.
Cut to it. Cut to it. Let's get down to it. Cut to it.
Hey, Gerard, where did you get that t-shirt?
You mean this thing?
Oh, yes.
I got it from cuttoitpodcast.com, where we have exclusive merchandise. Shout out to our guys at 704 Shop. But yeah, you can go on, buy you a t-shirt, subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
What does playing in the MLS mean to you today?
Man, today it's now just a platform, man. It's an opportunity to continue to play the sport I love, continue to try and master my craft, but also bring emphasis and attention to things within our society that I believe are very important and necessary to be brought to attention if we're going to move in a way that's conducive for all of us as people, man. I've really found a new sense of motivation. I've really found a centralized focus in what I want to accomplish for myself and my family. And I'm excited now. I mean, I've always been excited every time I hit the field, but it really hits different these days, man. Because I really understand the position that I've been put in, and with my history and my family and all the things that have made me who I am today, to really feel like this is what you were meant for, is an amazing feeling. And I'm looking forward to doing it as long as I can, and then continuing to push the views and the life and the world that I would like to see afterwards.
I want to shift to something because in 2015 you were arrested with a DUI and reckless driving. You was found not guilty. However, you were required to go into a treatment facility in Malibu. And according to your words, it changed your life.
Sure did.
How did that change? Oof.
Man, so this is a great, I love this topic because it's probably the onset of my transformation. Getting arrested and being, I mean, if I can kind of expedite that story. So I got stopped in Philly late night. I went out. I was not drunk, but you know, I was out late and I didn't know my way around the city. And I'm sure this has happened to many people, but you know, when you kind of, you're taking the exit and maybe you accelerated a little too hard or maybe not enough, you kind of do that wide, super wide turn on the exit. That's what happened with me. But it was 2 a.m. in the morning. There happened to be a cop sitting.
You sound like you were over there by Penn Station, getting off on that exit.
It was around there. It was around there.
Those turns are very wide exiting.
It was around there. It was. And there was also construction going on.
Still construction going on right now. Sorry.
Right. And it was the night of a demonstration for Freddie Gray. I don't know if you guys remember. Oh, Freddie Gray in Maryland. Yeah, okay.
I played in Baltimore.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, yep. So, the reason why that stuff is important is because I didn't find out until a year later that the cop who stopped me didn't even see me. He didn't see anything that he was telling or that he wrote in his report that he saw. It was actually another cop who was behind me who, and mind you, I had, you know, a nice white C300, blacked out tint, vinyl, black vinyl top, black rims.
Flexing.
So,
humble brand. He,
flex on. You know? Yeah, exactly. So he, a cop behind me saw me take the exit, radio to the cop in front, said, "Hey man, I don't know what he said," right? Because they told, they in their report, they said, "Oh, this guy is reckless. He almost hit a traffic cone," which there was cones everywhere. But either way, I get, they stop me.
Cones have feelings too.
Yeah, so you know, I get stopped. Two of them approach my car. First thing they say, "How much have you had to drink?" I said, "Bro, I haven't had nothing." He was like, "No, you've drank. I can smell it. Like, how much have you had to drink?" I said, "I haven't drank anything." "All right, give me your license." All right, so I'm looking. I give him my license and ask for the registration. And to be fair, like, my glove box, I had a lot of stuff in there, and I knew I didn't do anything wrong, so I took my time, right? And I could. I could feel my man's getting so, like, heated. It's like, "Yo, I don't have all fucking day. Give me your..." I'm like, "Yo, I'm looking for it right now." He said, "Know what? F it. Get out the car." I'm like, "Why do I need to get out the car now?" So, like I said, it was a whole day of the Freddie Gray joint. So I'm not trying to, you know, antagonize this guy and make the situation worse than it needs to be. Takes me out. Runs me through, you know, sobriety tests, which the judge literally a year later saw the video and said he's now going to use that dash cam footage as a basis for the rest of his cases because that's the best one he's ever seen. But these dudes was look like, I mean, "Do this, do that, do this, do that," in aggressive ways. You know, before I actually do it, I just asked them, you know, like, "Can you explain that slower, please? Because you're talking fast. I just want to make sure I do this right." I did it. I did everything. He said, "You know what? You're still getting arrested. Not only did you almost hit that cone, you almost hit me." And I'm like, "All right, now you're BSing. I didn't hit you. Like, look, I'm just trying to get home. I'm new to the city. I don't want no problems." It's like, "No, you're going to jail tonight." So they took me, man. They took me in. The tactics they used, bro. There was five or six other people literally getting booked for DUIs. I mean, there's dudes passed out, bro, like stumbling.
Like drunk.
And I'm in here. They got like four officers in there. Three of them are in my ear yelling, "Take your shoes off. Take your laces off. Hurry up. We don't have all that." They're clearly trying to intimidate. And I get through and they sit me down. One cop is behind me. One is next to me. One's across from me. They just start putting papers in front of me. "All right, sign this. This says that da 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 da." I'm like, "Whoa, whoa, 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 whoa. Slow down, bro. What am I signing?" Like, come on. He's like, "I just told you what you're signing." And I said, "Okay." So he gave it to me, and I sat there, and I started to read the paper. See? Would you believe these cats ripped the paper from in front of me and said, "Yo, what are you doing?" I said, "I'm reading the paper." They said, "No, don't read the paper. I told you what's on it." I said, "Look, I understand that you guys are a little flustered right now, whatever. I'm not signing anything until I read that paper." And then that's when one of them said, "Oh, that's a refusal. He refused. Lock him up." Mm. And in Pennsylvania, a refusal is a tier 3 DUI.
Wow. So that's how you were booked on that.
That's how I was booked on that, bro. And then they proceeded to keep me in. They kept me in the tank for 20 plus hours. Before even allowing a phone call. And it's funny because I was literally in there meditating. These cats was like, "Who is this mother? Like, who is this dude?"
So we have
meditating
a
meditating in the hole.
I have a
in a hole.
we had a conversation. I had a conversation with my producer. She said, CJ was meditating for 20 hours. I said, yeah, because his ass was in there 24. That's why. The first four, he was like, this can't be real. This can't be real. And then he was like, you know what? I got to get through this.
If I can get you to get out of here.
He was like, the first, he was like, 2 hours. Nah, they got to be joking. 3 hours. Man, they are not playing with me.
Yep.
It was weekend too, huh?
Yep. Ooh. Bro. Oh, and I mean, people are in there just screaming, yelling. Man, it's going wild in there. Like, they tossing the little cheese sandwich on the floor. I didn't even touch it, bro. I didn't touch nothing. I'm like, look, I'm in here, whatever. Like, it was a shitty situation. But 20 hours later, come out, my technical director for the team got me out. My mom had come up, you know, and everybody's like, just the disappointment. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, yo, look, it ain't what y'all think. Before I could even explain myself, the league releases a statement. Oh, CJ Spong is arrested on DUI charges, this, that, and the other. My the substance and behavior and abuse program, they hit me up saying, hey, look, like, because you refuse, you're looking at jail time. So you have to go to the rehab, basically, because then we're going to try and say, okay, those days that you had in rehab should be taken off your sentence.
They're trying to work the system just to help you out because they also know how the system is.
Exactly, exactly. And I'm over here like, wait, what? Obviously, this means I'm missing games. Obviously, everybody's over here thinking I'm some alcoholic, which that wasn't even the worst part about it. For me, it was just the fact that, like, I had just came back from an injury before that. I had a concussion for like the first month of the season, and it was tough, man. Like, it was a very bad concussion. Like, it was hard to get myself up certain days, and I was just getting back, scored in my first game back, and then boom, gotta go do this. But man, whew, I'm in Malibu. Like, they said rehab, but the treatment facility was just a different level. You know, had our own chef, like, everything gluten-free, like, organic. We were doing Tai Chi, equine therapy, you getting massages. They were letting me off the site to work out and stuff, you know. So it was like a crazy little unplugging disconnect that I got. Like, you can't be on your phone. And, you know, through the normal procedure of a rehab facility, I was able to understand that while I might have not had an addiction to alcohol, there was many other addictive qualities of my life. And, like, understanding the different methods and practices that are out there to bring more self-awareness into your experience, it just really changed my perspective of everything. And I began to find, again, my true nature, right? I began to understand, wow, like, even just how I was being an asshole I wouldn't say I was being an asshole.
Oh, you said, right, okay, all right. We will not edit that out.
You self-identified there, brother.
I was definitely.
Hey, 10 pages, he's like, I'm going to read every line.
You know, but it kind of goes back to what you said, you know, in that bitter place, you know, it's a night where people are literally marching in the streets because a guy, like, got killed by the cops, you know, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I bet y'all profile me, and I felt bitter, and that's where I realized, like, rather than channel that energy into basically just gaslighting a situation, how do I channel that into either making myself a better person or using that to make my surroundings better? And that's where it really all started for me, man. Like, that's what led to the ideation of my nonprofit out in Philly. That's what's led to, you know, right now I got working on two businesses right now, kind of based on sustainability. And one is based on sustainability, the hemp plant, and then another is based on bringing lifestyle skills and lifestyle management into athlete representation to kind of, you know, provide athletes all these different mechanisms that I had through, you know, a wild journey, so that there's an ability to, again, find value and worth in your own self and continue to take that into your career and obviously after. Yeah, and it was Malibu, California, bro. Like, I was waking up to sunrises, like, right on the water. You know, I got to, the dude that owns the house had another house right down the street that had a soccer field. So, like, I'm getting a train, you know, like, by myself. Again, it's Cali, like, and ironic, I ended up meeting my fiance and mother of my child that I just had.
It all ended up, it has a funny way of coming full circle.
It really does.
This segment we got coming up, last segment we'll wrap up, it's called The Deep Three. And it is three questions that really enable us to go take a deeper dive, you beyond the soccer field. So, Smitty, go ahead and ask me first.
What luggage have you carried around that has slowed your journey?
Ooh, I would say childhood trauma of continuing to find validation. Literally a lot of the topics that came up today. Yeah. You know, it's easy for me to, not easy, but I can say, I can see what I need to do to get out of that, but it doesn't mean that it's completely gone. You know, there was times when I was younger that moving through my days, I searched for validation from parents and teachers, you know, so much that, like, if I didn't consistently get that, it just weighed down on me. And it, even today, you know, in little moments, I can find myself just thinking the worst based off of maybe just miscommunication, right? Or like a facial expression that I read wrong.
What would you want Coach Tom Martin at JMU to say about the man you've become today?
Whew. Oh, man, that's a good one. I would want old Doc to say that I am a man that understands the value in being a man and trying to find whatever that definition is for me.
So, Steve, we heard about what happens when teammates don't see eye to eye in soccer. What about in football?
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Teammates don't see eye to eye just because you have the competitiveness. I don't believe, I really don't know about why guys may not, or, you know, pass the ball or something. But I think a lot of it has to do with ego. You know, a lot of times, whether it's a young player or older player, those players are pretty significant from wherever they're from. They've impacted so much that teams have said, I want to draft this kid, I want to draft this guy, I want to bring this man from this other team that he's been successful and bring him into our locker room, that, so his into our culture, so it can infect our team, to maybe it could rub off on some guys to be a lot more physical or attack the game with a lot more passion. So whatever that category is that team is looking for, it happens. But then you also have people from a lot of different places, right? And I say the dumb meters because common sense is different for various folks, and how you were raised determines how you dissect and look at things. So when you put a whole bunch of people, 80 guys from 80 different families and 80 different walks of life, you get a lot. You get 80 different conversations that don't always go peaches and cream, and so you just kind of got to, you have to work through it, and then you add the element of competition,
yeah,
compensation, the ability to be released or let go. That just heightens everything, and so. You know, sometimes lines get blurred. Sometimes it gets pretty fickle. And then people just get pissed off, because sometimes people just lose their jobs because the guy in front of them is better. Or sometimes people believe that the guy in front of them is better because the coach believes he's better, but the player doesn't buy into that. So that's I think that's a lot of things that times that happen and perspective. What is that perspective of that person? What is that point of view of that individual? Whether it's the guy that's beating a guy out or the guy that's getting beat out, how does he handle that? Doesn't always go well.
I can imagine.
Yeah. I mean,
I can only imagine.
Losing your job to a guy that you believe is not better than you. But the fact of the matter is, he may be, but you don't want to own that. That doesn't go well. You are a unique person. You are well worth it. You are competent. And most of all, you're lovable. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
I'm Jerrell Littlejohn.
And this is Cut to It.
Cut to It with Steve Smith Sr. That is me. Is a production of Cut to It LLC, Balto Creative Media, The Black Effect, and iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From Cut to It, executive producer Steve Smith Sr., co-host Gerard Littlejohn, talent and booking manager Joe Fushi, social media team Wesley Robinson and John Show. From Balto Creative Media, Cut to It is produced by Brian Baltashevich and Meredith Carter, with production assistance by Alex Labreck, production manager Sarah Pollock, theme music by Alex Johnson, lyrics and vocals by Anthony Hamilton. If you ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know.